to take an intro.
Well, why don't you get your favorite hanging on there? How about this one? You like this one?
Oh, yeah, that one's pretty.
That's pretty right there. Now, come here, let me show you something. I like the Blue Balls.
Nueve. Blue Balls NYCFC. Season 9.
I like the Blue Balls. The Blue Balls.
Nueve.
Blue Balls.
Season 9. Nueve.
Okay, sounds good. Like Japan's flag Blastoise version, ladies and gentlemen, you've got blue balls. My name is Jake Beckard, and I am your intrepid co-host, and I am joined this week, as every week, by my intrepid co-host, Mr. Trey Fillmore. Trey, how are you this week?
Good morning, Vietnam and other places that are not Vietnam. Good morning to you and everyone. It is morning for us.
Good morning, Ghana. That's pretty much all we've got, right?
Mozambique, mm-hmm. Where you at? Oh, yeah, you're right, Ghana. I'm seeing. He's still listening. He's still here, man.
Yeah, better believe it. Sound off in the comments if you have an exotic locale somewhere far away from us. Or if you are listening from Vietnam. Oh, my God, this one's going to be so terrible. We're so It's 8:30 in the morning. And we're dragging ourselves up by our bootstraps because NYCFC needs coverage, folks, and we're just the boys in blue to do it. Were we going to pass up an opportunity to talk about this match? Absolutely not. Did we have any time? No. So it's 8 in the morning, and we're going to give you the best we've got, which is not much. Trey, what'd you do this weekend? What'd you get up to?
Went to the game and sat on my ass and watched the NBA playoffs and... I think that's
got any
it.
Hot takes on the NBA playoffs? I liked one video on TikTok of people making fun of Charles Barkley and Charles Barkley making fun of San Antonio women. And now it's every other clip. It's that in South Park. I can't get away from them. It's fucking Charles
It's also
Barkley
in my YouTube
Shaq, like,
shorts algorithm, the Chuck and Shaq dynamic.
It's ridiculous. It's everywhere. It's getting pushed harder than crack in the 80s.
What? Oh my god. It's good TV.
Yeah, it is good.
It's good TV.
I mean, it makes me want to watch more NBA, which is ridiculous, but it does. I'm like, damn, these guys have so much fun. Maybe I should watch more basketball.
NBA is great. It's fun. Let's go Knicks, you know. You really get the sense of how good New York crowds are. And New York fan base is. I mean, because New York teams suck. Obviously, we're the only team to have won a championship in 12 years. So there's not too many reasons to celebrate, usually. But, you know, the awesomeness that we got during our playoff run and the fever that it whipped up and the fever that it gets, like, I don't know. I was at the bar here locally during our game against Philly, and it was, like, full. Like, with strangers. I didn't know these people, but people, you know, there's a good fan sports base here. That's why we got all these teams that we don't know what to do with, that we're juggling like limes. And, you know, let's go Knicks, baby. Like, I don't know. We'll cheer for them. The dynamic of, like, Nick Cushing and Coach Thibodeau of the Knicks and Santi Rodriguez and Jalen Brunson, I can't get over it. It's all good and fun. Hey, Jake. Can we do some light housekeeping?
I wish you would.
So, we didn't really do this last time, but thanks to our last episode. Thanks everyone for listening. We appreciate it. Thanks to Dan, of course, for doing that. But we forgot to say thanks to the City Boys podcast, Pod Luminati Bros, for like coming in last minute helping us with gear. That worked out totally great. Fucking easy to set up and sounded fine. So shout out to them.
Yeah, better than fine. Way better than what you're listening to right now.
And also, I didn't ask directly for Mike from Blue City Radio for microphones or gear. He just heard me talking about it and then just brought them from... whatever, Montauk, wherever he is now, and brought them all the way to the game. So we ended up with, like, way too much gear, thanks to the generosity of the fellow Pod Luminati. We have to thank them. And the other housekeeping is that we 99.9% chance we won't do a podcast next week.
Uh-huh.
So strap it.
Enjoy. This is all you're going to get. This is your meager servings. Yeah, yeah, we gotta... didn't do a thank you round. We really put a lot of... You especially, Trey, put a lot of elbow grease into making it last week happen. You know, we're very lazy, so on the instances where we have to do something, it feels like an enormous lift, and you took on the bulk of that lift, so thank you to Trey Fillmore of Blue Balls NYCFC for all that he did to make last week's episode possible.
No, you know, completely unrelated. It's like, you know, completely unrelated to me. It's like if you were a husband and had to buy, say, an anniversary gift or wedding anniversary gift or something. It's like the one time a year you got to try really hard. I wouldn't know that, though, because I give gifts all the time, and I'm a giving person. Yeah,
and it comes very easily to you. You don't have to worry about it or think about it at all, as we all know.
Oh, you'll find out, my Brody. You will soon find out. Speaking of, so this month is going to be crazy. Well, just stay tuned on the Twitter. I'm just doing the housekeeping now. Even though we have really good recidivism on this podcast, and I thank you guys for...
Recidivism?
What is it? What do I mean?
Retention?
What do I mean? Retention.
Recidivism is like the podcast is a crime, which it is, that you as a listener are committing every time you listen to it.
You're so right. It's 8 in the morning.
But it's more correct. That's another TikTok I found yesterday. Is a supercut of all the malapropisms in The Sopranos. That's a good one.
Line it up next to the ones on this podcast done by yours truly. I swear. I go pound for pound.
Yep.
What was the word you said?
Retention? We have good retention.
We have good retention on episodes. Like 80 to 85% of you listen all the way through. And that's like fantastic for a fucking podcast that's this long. So regardless,
you,
for the
Drews.
For the 15% or whatever, or 20% that don't make it to the end, we might as well do the housekeeping at the beginning because to tell you that we won't be here next week. And also that shit's going to be crazy this month, but we will figure it out one way or another.
And also that we love our Podluminati brothers. Listen, we're out there. We joke about being in competition, but like this is a crew, you know? This is a squad. We roll deep, and we are grateful for those who roll with us. Trey, can we talk about the soccer?
Yes.
It's great. It's good. It's fun. It's 3-1 victory over FC Dallas this past weekend, answering, I thought, all of a sudden, quite a number of the questions we posed on this very podcast last week. A remarkable scoreline and a remarkable match with some remarkable adjustments. I mean, first and foremost, can we talk about Santi Rodriguez in the false nine position?
Yeah, what do we call this lineup? Sanchi lineup. Sanchi and the seven golden rings or whatever.
I don't think you've hit it quite yet, but we could play with one of those.
Guys, I'm trying here. I think
Santi's nuts. I think it just sounds too much like Santi's nuts. It doesn't feel like we've included anything new.
We could really call this the Santi's nuts formation. Anyways, the point is we have Santi and Richie Ledesma starting a game on the field for the first time.
Mm-hmm. This was the big question we talked about last week, Trey. Is there a way to optimize Ledesma and Santi at the same time on the same field? Was this it? Was the answer yes, and it's this?
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, it is. This is the way. this is the way, as they say. You know, because we've had Talish up there at the nine. We've had Gabraham Siegelman up there at the top. And now we have, you know, that we were running out of options, essentially. Like, GP would probably be the next one. But as we saw in this game, more than even in the previous game where he also reminded us of he loves to pull the trigger cutting in from that left side. He does have that, you know, Arjen Robben DNA, where he's like, I'm going to cut it in and shoot, and I'm going to do it again and again from the exact same spot on the field, and there's nothing you can do. And one of those times he scored, and it was called back. So putting that to the side, putting the other things we've tried to the side, the thing left was like, okay, Santi Rodriguez playing a false nine is like not very different than what you've done your career. You know, outside of the time we played him at the wing last year, he is, you know, that's we're not asking him to do too much. A lot of the same natural skills that he uses, you know, being a good distributor at times, it's just like you're further up the field and there's less through passing. You are now the guy at the end of that. But we've seen him be super assertive as a 10, like not in a way that Maxi is like. Maxi was always the like first option, is always creating and keeping his head up and spraying the ball. It like Santi was always someone that you don't know what their next move is going to be. Is he going to pass? Is he going to whatever? And I think the thing that like I do want to say that I've been super impressed by Santi's effort this year. You know, he got the DP contract. He could very easily be like, fuck this. Like, I'm set this year. I could take a little break. And then, you know, next year I'll turn the gas on. Or at the end of the season, he didn't have to come out as hot as he did. But he did. He came out hot and firing, even without a preseason. Just in terms of effort. And now we're seeing it all kind of come together. And I was super impressed. I think the biggest indicator for me was like this moment where he got the ball on the wing from Talish. Like it was like he kind of, you know, underlapped into the corner flag area, and as he's running there, and then he gets the ball one touch, and then his second touch is a pass back to Talish, like cutting inside, which is, this is the kind of movement we need if we're going to run this kind of formation. Mm-hmm. But he did it without looking. He did it without picking up his head. He just knew Talish was there. Peripheral vision and chemistry and natural sense. He like knew he was there. He didn't have to look up. He wasted zero time. And I'm like, that's next level. That's like, that's the stuff that gets you to Europe, you know? Is that level of understanding and feel for the game, and also obviously that it showed, as I said, like that the dynamism that we can insert with Talis playing on the wing. So I loved
it. Yeah, because then you have a player then who knows that Talis will be there, right? Like that's the thing. The thing about the Santi Talish pairing in this case is that you have someone with the confidence to make that play without picking their head up, and someone with the confidence to be executing that play without having to be checked in about it. You know, like mm-hmm. Talish is going to be making that run 9 times out of 10, 10 times out of 10, even, you know, that's why he can make that move, is because you have two players whose ambition matches each other such that there doesn't have to be any sort of like caution or double or triple checking to get that ball movement going. It's what we mean when we talk about cohesion, right? Because cohesion also requires a degree of talent and confidence that allows for like to get there before you're thinking about it. And it's what you see in that connection.
Also, I think it's fascinating that why does it happen that Talish Magno, when he's at the nine, doesn't make the runs in the box he needs to, can't find space to get open, can't, you know, loses touches, takes bad shots. But then when we play him on the wing, then he starts making runs into the box and like finding space in the box and composure and finishing. And he had he finished in this match. Like he's like a better striker when he's not playing striker. He's like the invisible man and mystery man. Like he's much better at being invisible when no one's looking, and he's much better at being a striker when he's not. That makes sense.
Do you think it's because all of a sudden he no longer feels like he has to generate? You know, he just has to feel. He feels he just gets to feel like he has to finish what's already been started for him.
Yeah, I do. I think there's a psychological comfort blanket around him when he has so much space on the wing. Like he has that because he loves to just fucking, you know, it's like basketball. He likes to get the ball and then face up. And like, and there's no, he's not getting the ball in transition. He's not on a fast break. He's not, you know, putting his head down and going to the rack. He's like, I'm going to face up this guy because I think I can dribble past him. And like, that's what he does. And he does it well. So I think that comfort level, you're right. He doesn't have the pressure of like trying to make things happen in the box. He has the comfort of having space to make things work and make these underlapping runs with Santi and stuff like that. And then you have Richie Dees, who is a good compliment. Like, they have a lot of similar skills, but at the same time, like, it's that downhill thinking, that downhill running, that downhill creation, the ability to, I mean, that's 1A when I look at him, and 1B is his understanding of the game, like the understanding of when to provide an overload on one side or to provide a switch on the other side, and he knows how to maneuver in that way. But he spent a lot of time, you know, hugging Santi's hip in this match, and it worked well as well. He just picked the chances of when he needed to move around really well. And I think there's still work to do, but I think they do it really well. I enjoyed it. I was going to let you cut in, but because I do have a criticism too.
I want to hear the criticism as well.
The criticism is, and I think it's really funny, because I talked to Richie after the game, and he's like, yeah, I think defensively, me and Santi being there, like, everything's good. It's just offensively, I have some stuff to work on, like, of building chemistry and whatever. And, like, in my head, I was like, you're the pro. You know better than me. But my sense was, like, flipped. I think there is something that he's not in the flow of the, him and Santi played the press and defense very differently. And like, I don't know who's right, but one of them is wrong. And like, I think there's something with Santi, with Richie Dees, that's like, I think he's still learning kind of who he needs to press when, because he's the secondary pressure. You know, because it depends on the game, yeah. Right? Like when Gabriel Siegelman was pressing as the primary defender, then Santi was the one who was backing him up and covering the outlet passes. And like, Santi again is like the effort, and he's like going for it, and like those two like provide a lot of pressure. And I don't think you have to press every minute of every game. It's impossible to do so like at full effort. Like, It also takes a smart conservation and the ability to you know, cut off angles, which I think Richie does really well. Like, he doesn't need to use too much effort because he knows where to be. But at the same time, like, there was moments where he seemed like him and Santi weren't on the same page defensively. And like, when he was, that's what led to like a turnover that made a goal happen and things like that. So,
but what do you mean when you say they weren't on the same page defensively? Like, they just weren't, like, they weren't thinking about the same places to apply that pressure, and so like we lost the secondary pressure. Just a matter of defensive sensitivity, like that same thing that we were talking about, but just like not being able to execute without thinking about it.
Yeah, it's like there's three things you can do: is you can press, you can kind of apply an amount of pressure, but not directly, you know, run at the person carrying the ball, or you can drop back into a block, like if you have one set up. But and our team fluctuates between the first two. Like, you're either pressing or you're sitting a little bit back, but you're still in that line. You're still, you know, trying to prevent any passes directly through the middle with your body, with the trying to break up those passing lanes. And I think that they just got caught too often between the two. Like, if Santi's like pressing someone hard, then Richie needs to, like, we have Keaton and we have Jimmy. You can follow the primary outlet, the person most likely to receive the ball. If it's the right center back that's being pressed, then the left center back needs to be covered. If you're doing a direct pressing scheme that, you know, our team generally does. And Richie seemed like it was maybe in his head that, like, in different schemes, you might have someone else covering that guy, and your job is to be backup if the primary press doesn't work. If Santi tries to steal the ball and gets dribbled around, then you can have someone, you know, right behind them. But that's not our scheme, I don't believe. I mean, that's not what anyone has done. I mean, it left people open is the point. It's like, especially just like in the first half after the called back goal, there was a lot of times where Dallas could easily make their way up after just some light finagling. This is like really nitpicky stuff. It's just, and I frankly, I think, you know, I trust Richie that he feels comfortable defensively, and I think he is. I just think it's like a fit and fitness thing. It's like he's going to get a better natural sense of what to do when he's out there. Like him and Santi up front, this is the first time we've had them as the two pressers, like, ever. So obviously it's going to take some time. And also, like, this is his fourth full 90. I don't even know if he went full 90 in this game. I can't remember. I told him to his face he did, and I think I was wrong.
You were indeed this is wrong.
Fuck. Shit, I know. He gave me like a look. I was like, fuck, I got that wrong. I'm not going to correct myself. I don't care. He's only had three full 90s.
Wasn't even particularly
90s.
Close. He was out at 64 minutes.
Yeah, so it was a planned sub. Okay, I fucked up. Whatever. It was clear. Like, he hasn't played... He's played three full 90s in 3 years. Well, that's not a lot. That's not a lot of fitness, you know, because that's the thing when he came in. It's like this guy's injury city and like has not had a lot of time to build that level of fitness. And I think you can just tell. But that's fine because he's honestly like further along than I thought he would be. Like the fact that him and Santi started and were dominant is a testament to how good Richie is, how well he assimilates into the lineup.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, do you worry about that? Do you worry about him? Would you rather see him try to graduate to full 90s and like use that power for the entire length and breadth of the game, or would you rather stay conservative with an injury prone player?
I think we know this is like really macabre. We have Richie for 1 year, and we know it, and we know he's leaving after this year. We just got to use him, man. You got to squeeze that toothpaste out of a tube. I would use Richie as much as possible. He's good. Why not? I hope, like, the whole pressing thing was just a tactical thing I noticed. I'm not harping on, and I might be completely wrong, but I'm not harping on him on that. I'm still a big fan, and I think we need to use him as much as possible, for sure. Especially, you know, we'll get to talking points that we didn't sign anyone. So, like, this is the set we're running with. And I think that this performance had a lot to do with that decision, I'm sure.
Yeah, it makes we must hope so. It's certainly an optimistic looking result. Do you think that from your prediction, do you think that this is where we stay until something goes awry? I mean, I think it's obviously a fan favorite. It feels great to win a match 3-1, but we also know that Nick Cushing likes to keep his options open and likes to keep his rotation moving.
I would say no. It is what we should aim for doing every week, but we're going on the road in various weathers and conditions and travel distances for a whole month. We also have, at the end of the month, Open Cup game and another midweek game. So by the end of this month, we'll have probably used like four different starting lineups at least. So I'm not predicting that we'll use it every week and that this is what you should expect, but I will 100% say that this is gonna be the most likely lineup every week for sure. I guarantee it. It's the best lineup. It's the best players that we can get on the field, I think.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I don't see why there like needs to be any particular shakeup. There's something that we found here that clicks, that flows, that uses both like the skills of our key midfield playmakers, that pushes things up the wings in a way that feels like it destabilizes. I mean, certainly a club like FC Dallas. This is a question that I did want to ask. To what extent did FC Dallas lose this match? I mean, like, they had opportunities. They got the ball into the final third. They had not like a ton of possession and not a ton of shots, right? We dominated in the basic stats, but FC Dallas didn't flag in this game and were even able to like pull one back against us ceremonially perhaps. So what was it that kept them from being, from keeping pace with us in terms of goal scoring? And why was it Luis Barraza? And now it's the Luis Barraza propaganda hour again.
Well, that's a good big part of it, a nice crunchy part. I think obviously a big part as well is that they didn't start Jesus Ferreira and they didn't have, what's his name? I'm seeing an S in my head. Whatever, their other, their DP winger, whatever. It'll come to me. Franco? Franco Harris? I don't know. Anyways, they didn't have some of their best players on the field, but they're deep. Like, they're a good team. We know this. FC Dallas is a team that is good and up and coming and have done well building a squad, and they're well coached. But I think defensively, they can't. There was nothing they were going to do, even if they had Jesus Ferreira and Al Franken. I can't think of his name. They would have...
Al Franken.
They would have had a problem. Who is it? You're not helping me.
No, I don't
You're
know.
You're not looking? Okay, I'll look it up. They wouldn't have had a chance. Like, that fucking four-headed monster we have up front now with Keaton and Jimmy in right behind. Like, that's... Mm-hmm. No one wants to face that. They got Chanot and Martins in there. Another good Chanot game. Another good Martins game. Brian Kufre, I like being on the more conservative side of the field. Like, I'm okay with him, like, picking his chances and stuff. It's not what I expected when we brought him in, but I like him being... It helps to have him be more conservative defensively for us. Like, when it's just Martins and Chanot flying solo, it's a little shaky, but... Just in terms of bodies on the field and numbers, but when Kufre gets back there, he does a good job. Now multitasking, trying to look up this team. Yeah, Luis Barraza. Why don't you talk about Luis Barraza while I look up this one guy? I can't think of his name.
I'll do my best. I think you could just let him go. I don't think he's a listener. I don't think he's going to hold it against you. But I just thought that Barraza's, I mean, like, just highlight reel shit, right? Like, and what we've talked about before, which is that his shot stopping is on point. His sense of being where he needs to be, of recovery, of being able to, like, to launch himself and go that, like, that extra yard in the air at the same time as he's always aware of the position of the ball. It feels very hard to catch. We've seen so little of Luis Barraza in this season looking out of place, you know, looking like he's had a lapse, or looking like he's had like a point of confusion or a focus issue. It's just not there. He's where he needs to be every time he needs to be there so often. And it's remarkable. He's not perfect, but he's smart. And he's agile, and that's about as much as you could hope for from a goalkeeper. We've spilled a lot of ink about it, so we don't need to talk about it forever. Did you find your guy?
Yeah, you're the Dallas DP that didn't play in that match. Hey, man, Al Franken wasn't too far away. It's Alan Velasco.
Hey, pretty that's good.
I don't know. It came to me in my head. You know, he's great. He's still doing great. We're keeping the train rolling. Barraza is killing it. And he explained why he had the one punch that was weird that led to his amazing save. And, you know, I don't think the plan was like, ooh, I'm going to punch this into a dangerous area so I could get a sick highlight out of it. He explained why. I didn't get a chance to hear. I just overheard it. I didn't get a chance to, like, really listen in. I don't mind that he likes to punch the ball. Punching the ball is fine. If you can get it out of the box, cool. It's not like we have to catch it or whatever. Like, okay, like the aim is keeping goals out of the net. And like He's A1 at that. The problem is that this team keeps giving up goals on fucking set pieces and fouls. What are we doing? Like, stop it. Bad. Like, it's like, what do we have to do? That should be the goal for the next four weeks. This team's on the road. Is like, hey, can we get
our set piece defense down?
It's like, keep the focus. It's a focus issue, and it's like all over. And there hasn't been like one player to put it on. There's been a different player every match. It's really frustrating. It's frustrating because like Barraza only having one clean sheet this year for all the performances he put in. It sucks. Like, he deserves more.
Yeah, agreed. Totally agreed. I think we're done on this match. What do you think, Trey?
Yeah, I think shout out Jimmy Sands for playing after playing, being the best player on the field for the U.S. men's team at midweek after being injured in the previous game. And then, you know, just going and playing is like fucking insane. It's insane.
That's about as good as a segue as I can imagine, Trey. Why don't we play the Talking Points theme song?
Talking Points. Talking Points. Talking points.
That was your Talking Points theme song, and these are your Talking Points. Trey, James Sands was the best player on the field for the U.S. men's national team in a midweek match. Tell us about why. How was Jimmy used, and does it portend a future for him on this side? Are we finally getting the James Sands era of the U.S. men's national team, or is this just a throwaway friendly, and nobody should be thinking or worrying about it?
Yeah, I think it's a throwaway friendly. I think it was pretty boring. I think it was hard for either teams to get things going. I think it's always funny when USA plays Mexico in the United States. It just shows how much Mexico cares about soccer that they buy 80% of the tickets. It's always fun to see, but it's not like there was anything to, you know, write home about per se in this fun little friendly match. What was it called? Like the Continental Classico or some whatever. They dressed it up like it meant something, but it didn't, of course. Jimmy played a double pivot with Kellen Acosta, and after, you know, handling this new single pivot at NYCFC, he's like, that's easy for him. And Kellen Acosta did not look good, and he's aging. And he was, you know, the first choice off the bench in the World Cup, Kellen Acosta, at that position. And I think, like, this was huge for Jimmy. It, like, put him on the map. Like, he clearly knew he was, like everyone watching was, like, all the fucking sickos that watch games like that. Like, would, if you're a friggin' Cincinnati fan or whatever, a fan living in Montana or whatever, you could easily be like, oh, that guy was the best guy for us. And I want to see more of him.
It builds the pressure campaign so that it's not just sickos like you and me. It's sickos all around this country.
James and sickos. Yeah, we need more of them. And it was good. I liked it. Sean Johnson starting in that. That was interesting.
My headphones came out, but they're back now.
Well, you hear me? You know, good for good old Jimmy for getting that performance in.
Can you hear me? Am I back?
You're back. I can hear you. I just kept talking. God.
I lost you for a second. It was all my fault. Good for Jimmy. Good for us. Yeah, delightful performance. Fantastic. Do you think it made never mind. I'm not going to go down that line. Okay. What are you looking for when you watch a U.S. men's team in this period, right? In this like early, far-flung, like when you start to get a sense of like where we're going directionally, aside from does one of my favorite players get enough play time and is everybody celebrating him on Twitter, like what do you want to see at this point?
You're just seeing like either new guys or guys you haven't seen a lot of. Like, what do they have, any tools, like elite tools that they could bring into a future camp and like then develop the men's national team game around that, you know, because you're not, when you're building a national team system, there's like the careful balance between what you want to run and the players that you have. And it's like much more tilted towards the players that you have, other than like if you ran a club team, you can be like, oh, I need this guy who can fit my system. But it's like if you're the national team coach. You can't be on the transfer market. You know, it's you do with what you can. And so you're like trying to see what you got. Just if there's any young gems, any who's a good locker room presence. Now, obviously, I can't. You can't see that from TV, but that's what they're looking at. But what I'm looking at is like, can this guy do well on a big stage? Does this guy have any traits that I wasn't aware of? How are they deployed in this game compared to how they're deployed in MLS or mm-hmm. their club team in Europe? Like, that's a big thing because now you're seeing what they're being asked to do by the U.S. coaches and staff. And like, that's revelatory in the same way. And I think that's the extent of it.
Sure.
It's nothing. Yeah. It's meaningless. Whatever. We don't have a coach. We don't have
scouting.
But we do have. Can I do this transition? I'm going to step on whatever you plan to talk about next. We do have a new U.S. men's national team sporting director.
Which begs the question, is that what you're looking for? Are you looking for what the trickle down effect of staff shakeups? Like,
well, we'll see.
For the team.
It's I will be next time. You know, it's early days, but I wanted to see how you felt about, and you're going to be like, I didn't even know this happened. I don't know
anything.
No, I
certainly didn't.
But you know enough ball to have a take on the fact that our new sporting director is the former sporting director of Southampton.
Ah.
Yeah. We got a friggin' non-American in the sporting director role.
Wow.
We're shaking things up.
Wow.
It's 2023. We are not building that wall. We are letting them over and into
that Atlantic wall.
Yeah.
A British football executive.
Yeah.
Is how he's described in the ESPN story. Matt Crocker is his name, in case you're searching for it.
Yeah, that'll be good.
I miss Claudio. I'm saying, you know,
Claudio didn't work for the U.S. men's national team as much as he wanted to. You mean Ernie Stewart?
I want the tension. I want the force. I miss the storyline that produced this. Now we're coming back to a settling period. You know, we're bringing the no drama Brits in, just to. It's a little like the adults are back in the room. Do you know what I mean? It feels, which I don't know that I like. I want more American jockeying for position from purely a dramatic standpoint. And instead it's just, you know, good old reliable Southampton Matt Crocker. What was his run with Southampton? How long was he there?
You know, it wasn't great. He was kind of like trying to help a struggling club, you know. But, you know, from everything I've seen, it's not, there was no direct implication on him per se. Like, he's got good reviews. It's just that, like, he's good at cleaning up messes. So that's a good sign. I wouldn't say he's good at cleaning up messes, that he's comfortable cleaning up messes.
Do you think it means that he will be also providing support for the U.S. women's national team during the World Cup prior to his start date?
I don't know. I don't like it. But
it seems like a weird lumping in, doesn't it?
What I assume is that he will use that time to learn about, like, national teams in World Cup mode. You know, like, this is how America does it. This is how we're going to fly. This is how we're going to do this. This is how we're going to book hotels. This is how we're going to train, set a training schedule, whatever. For the women this year, I think he's going to probably be like, you know, I don't think he's going to change everything. I think he's just going to be both in an advisory role and a learning role. You know, learn how we do it and maybe give some advice on how he would do it. I don't know. But it's an expectation that, you know, that everything's overlapped. It's a fucking big mess. And that's what got us into this mess in the first place. But that it's like we're a big pile of U.S. soccer is a big tangled pile of electrical cords that we need to undo, you know, and some of that is overlap. I love the fact that we didn't get a fucking American. Like, good. Like, this is not the time. This is the time to, like, settle everything down. We got a World Cup in 3 years that we're hosting. That means we don't have to qualify. So the sporting aspect is less of a concern. But the institutional aspect, now we have 3 years to, like, build that up and to, like, you know, the chuff from the whatever. What am I saying?
To the wheat from the chaff is the phrase you're looking you. For.
Yes. And the I think, you know, whatever. I'm chuffed.
I'm chuffed as hell to have Matt on this team.
I mean, so the biggest, we can probably leave it at there because this isn't that kind of podcast, but I'm just, you know, we'll see who he hires is the big thing. Did they get a Brit to do their own bidding and bring Greg back? We'll see.
Interesting.
The
yeah.
funniest of all
Is it a false
outcomes.
Flag operation? A false British flag operation and it's just an excuse to bring Greg back? Or will we have some fucking limey running the men's national team? Are we going to wake up one morning and see in the newspapers that Sam Allardyce is the fucking head coach of the men's team? Who knows?
I could absolutely see Neville getting fired or leaving Miami and going to...
Damn, talk about failing upwards. We'll see.
Yeah, when I say I can see it happening, I mean, I can't see it happening, but I would like to... That it would be funny. That it would be one of the funnier outcomes that we could have.
Yeah, that'd be a good time. I'd be into that. All right, well, that'll be a fun narrative to watch. I would keep an eye on what this means for the women's game. You know, that's the phase that we're in right now. We should be paying attention to the run-up to the World Cup. And the idea, I mean, just the fact that it's mentioned here in this story in multiple places means that it's going to have a cultural effect on how that team is run as well. So keep your eyes on the prize. Keep your nose to the grindstone. See what happens with Matt Crocker's appointment. But hey, this isn't the only European news that we have to talk about today, Trey.
Do you know to what I refer? Tanti Goleador.
Yeah! Tanti. Oh my god. Imagine this shit. I mean, it's out of control. Tanti Castellanos. 4 goals. 4 goals. Against Real Madrid. The quote that's floating around everywhere, you've already seen it, making Real Madrid look like Real Salt Lake. This was a star-making performance in La Liga for NYCFC's most shining alum ever? Right? I mean, I can't think of anybody...
What is that a question? Name someone else. Has someone scored 5 against Madrid? I mean...
No, there's no one even close. Nobody who has who has come up through NYCFC and gone on to greener pastures has ever showed up like this. This is, and it's no, you know, it means something that officially he is an NYCFC player, a current NYCFC player on loan. You know, and like in just in the press alone, NYCFC must be in the same breath, in the headline often, of this event. It's huge. It's huge for us. It's huge for Tati. Let's talk about the game first. How did he pull it off, Trey? How did it happen?
I don't know, man. He was just doing Tati stuff. I think the fact that it happened so early, it got his gears running, got their gears running, you know, because Girona's not a team that... It's not... Now we're not talking MLS, so it's not about teams that have some kind of parity or, you know, equally try to possess or defend. You know, we're talking about a team that knows who they are, and it's like, oh, we're against Madrid or Barcelona or Sevilla or whatever. Like, we're gonna sit a little back on this one. But in this game, like, they're at home. Real Madrid, I think, might have had some rotation at some point. I'm not sure. But regardless, yeah, I think Real Madrid might have had some rotation, but doesn't matter. They just like they got a good opportunity, and then boom, goes in. And I think it just started his whole thing because, like, all four of the goals were, like, Tati goals. We're like, I'm going to head the ball in from across. I'm going to fucking slot it in on the break. Whatever. It was great. It was so vintage Tati, you know? It was great to see him. I mean, look, there's not enough could be said. Everyone knows the talking points here, but that they're worth bathing in is, like, this is huge for him. Imagine Tati, like, living the dream from his fucking Universidad Chile whatever team to Montevideo in 2017 to NYCFC in 2018 to Girona in 2022 to scoring four goals against Madrid. Like, this is the dream, and he did it. And, you know, I'm sure he feels great. NYCFC, we get to see our boy, you know, represent on the big stage, do a good job. And, you know, the other half of that coin is the coin involved. This is, we had our show pony go up on the main show and fucking put on a performance. So, you know, was repeated and beaten to death, you know, the price, yesterday's price is not today's price. We got both eyeballs and value, you know, and that's good.
Do you think that it's a guarantee that Tati goes this summer? Not that he doesn't come back to, like, because everyone, there's lots of clickbait headlines like, is he coming back to MLS and blah 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 blah. We all know that the answer is no. But, right, is there a way that at this point this could be mismanaged? That, like, this, that finding a rock solid high value transfer doesn't happen even after a performance of this magnitude, or is this just a bidding war at this point?
Yeah, I will say, for the first part of that, I think you said we all know it's not true that he's coming to MLS. Well, we do now, but I was pulling my hair out. It's probably the dumbest NYCFC related take, talking point, whatever you want to say, was this weird hope that he would come back and score goals for us again. Like, he's not coming back. He was never coming back. He didn't want to be here when he was here for the beginning of 2022. Like, he wanted to leave that December. Do people not remember the weird cryptic tweets he was putting out about a year ago at this time? There was no snowball's chance in hell that he was going to come back this summer. It's just delusional. And I understand the delusion. Like, people want it to be true. And it's possible that legally that he could have come back. But outside of that, he wasn't coming. And I'm glad that this game is finally, like, people understand he's not coming. But in terms of, is there a possibility this could be mismanaged, as you asked me, I'm not going to doubt David Lee on things like this ever again. Because we had doubts about how he was managing this whole situation before. He's fucking right on the money right now. He is. Like, I am no longer questioning him turning down a $12 million bid, you know? Tati's going to go for more than that. For sure.
God bless him, and he deserves it. Feels good, man. Feels good to have been, to have been there when, you know?
Yeah.
What is it? Pull up the Oops All Tati memes that you made 5 years ago on Cap'n Crunch cereal box fronts. Which begs the question for oh, go ahead, Trey.
No, I was saying it's a good time. We've been doing this for a long time.
We've been doing it for too long. But this is one of the advantages. You get to see this trajectory.
It's so funny to, like, see him in his neck tattoo and be like, I remember when he didn't have that neck tattoo.
Yeah. You know? Here's a segue. Because, right, is one of the reasons why we keep on talking about Tati Castellanos, is he coming back, way. Because now we know we're not signing anybody to replace him, and he's the only option that could reasonably move back here and do what we need somebody to do, which is to score goals.
Is there a question there? What do you think?
The question is that the reason why that why that talking point gets aired so often, of like, or why that's raised so much, the question of whether or not he's going to come back, right?
No, I don't blame.
At this point, it's the only way that we get a striker. Right?
Again, I call it stupid, and because it is, but it's not to like denigrate the people who believed that it was possible, because I understand the desperation, because we were looking at, are we going to run out Gabriel Siegelman? Just love saying that. Shout out Dan. I'm going to keep saying that. Hey, are we going to run him out continuously for, you know, staring that in the face? And this is nothing on Gabe either. He's just a young guy who, like, you know, it took Tati months and years. Like, it would take a new striker months and years, like, developmentally. And people were panicking. Like, what are we going to do? We don't have a nine. Rightfully so. We've been panicking since he left, frankly. And since Edbert left, and since, you know, Tolish didn't work out. So, I think it was reasonable to understand. But you're right. We didn't make the move. I think having Santi play there as a false nine and having it work so well, now we'll see if it works again in the future. We'll see if how much of the hand that Cushing wants to show. Like, he might be more willing to switch things up more often. But I think that we're in a much better place, you know, having someone like Santi play up there than not. And I think the other thing to consider, like, would it have been good to get a striker in this window? Yes, and the team was trying. But at the same time, it's only like 9 weeks until the next window opens. And it's not that a deal will be done when that window opens. Like, we'll be ready to hand in paperwork or something. That's just the opening. Like, we have all summer to, like, try to get someone in at a time that's more convenient, by the way, you know, because it'll be the off season in Europe and there's no World Cup. Like, we don't have to navigate anything, really. If there's no Euros, like, it's just free time for us to, like, scout, to negotiate. And, you know, the Santi thing gave us confidence. Like, it's going to be a rough stretch. Now we're on the road and play like 6 games in the next 4 weeks and whatever. But we, and then we have another month, and then, you know, the window will be open. Like, we just have to survive the next 4 weeks. And I think the team felt they could with the players that we have, and they're not necessarily wrong.
I think that's a reasonable expectation. I mean, just looking at it, right? It's looking at the performances we put in. This has not been a team that has been struggling to keep its head above water. We've had some disappointing performances, but we've also had some, like, pretty satisfying ones. This is a solidly mid-table team, I'd say, which often shows glints of being able to get up to that higher echelon. This team has plenty of talent on it. Is it finished? I don't know. That's the ongoing question of the season. But it's not in dire straits, right? Like, it has enough to do on its own without having to resolve that issue right now, despite, like, the hand-wringing and the panic and all of those things that we've been talking about. There is goal-scoring talent on this team. It's just been a little bit weird trying to figure out how to get it to score goals, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't find myself particularly worried either. I'm excited for the next round, and I think that we've got. I think particularly following this match, it's easy to, like, breathe a little bit more, and say, okay, we have something to. We have clay here, that will be
exactly
that we can use in a worthwhile way for the next, you know, however many weeks until something about this roster gets shaken up.
Yeah, exactly. Do you want to quickly, I can't believe we're going long, even though it's so early and we want to get the fuck out of here.
We're going normal. We haven't hit the hour mark yet. Let's knock out Toronto. Shall we do it?
Wait, man, we gotta pay respects to a fallen brethren and Melda Amundsen.
Oh yeah, I know. You're right. All right, Melda's been traded away for allocation money, which, don't you always feel like that? whenever it's some version of Garber Bucks, don't you sort of feel like there's an ignominy to that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I'm not even worth
like,
a plane.
Oh, I got sent across the sea for Monopoly money. This is fucked.
You know, rest in piss. that's so
Where'd he go? Columbus? Is that right?
Correct.
Goodbye.
It sucks. Like, who knows? I don't know. Who knows? Like, why it didn't work? Why, you know, a second round draft pick, a right wing player, took his job last year? Who knows why we decided to buy Brian Kufre and shove him further down the depth chart? And he hasn't played a minute since September. And he, you know, hey, by the way, never mind. The reason I wanted to pull this up was to brag. Remember my tinfoil hat theory about how sweet and nice Nick Cushing was being to Melda in the press conferences, even though he wasn't giving him a goddamn minute of game time?
Are you feeling so vindicated right now?
I told you. No, because it was obvious, you know. You know, we're out here spreading the seed is not what I wanted to say, but it came out.
spreading our seed.
Like Johnny Appleseed. We're out here spreading. Like, so the next time, no one's getting playing time before transfer window, and the coach is talking all nice about him. Now you'll know. You'll think of my, you know, the stupid podcast and like, oh, last time Trey said, like, this guy was going to get traded. And you'll know. Like, that's the thing in sports. It's any sport. Like, this happened basketball, football, whatever. And, yeah, so of course it was going to happen. And it did. And best of luck. He won a championship with us. He helped us. And he was a super nice guy. But, you know, them's the breaks. Have fun in Columbus, Ohio. and you saw he's replacing our old academy player and twin brother of James Sands, Will Sands.
Oh, shit. I did not know that.
Because he tore his ACL.
Good on you, Melda. Thank you for teaching us how to say your name. And thank you for all of your service to NYCFC. We'll miss you, buddy. All right, speaking of faraway lands, Canada is where we're going this weekend.
Good job.
I like that. Oh, good job. It's terrible. It's terrible. Toronto, one of several NYCFC historical rivals on the East Coast. Looking at this match, Trey, what are you looking out for? I mean, first and foremost to me is, do we redux this Ledesma-Santi connection? Like, is do we see a game plan that matches or is in any meaningful way different from the lineup that we saw against Dallas? What do you think?
Yes. Just do it again. Let's see if it works on the road. You know, it looks great. The car looked great in the garage. Let's give it a test drive, you know, on the road. And we got to beat our old buddy, Sean Johnson. I'm now realizing saying it that I was supposed to have a piece written this week and I did not finish it. Oops.
Wow. Oops.
Oops. Well, who knows when that'll come out. We got to beat good old Sean John. Look, Toronto's not great. They really stumbled out of the blocks. Like, I fucking hammered last week too. They're, you know, if there's a, this really could not have worked better. Like, bring in Santi and Richie and, like, slowly bringing them back. And the first game they're together is like, before, you know, this. And we have neglected to talk about how great Micha's looked as well and whatever. But the timing of all of this is really lining up to, like, okay, now we're on a big road streak, but we got to build that confidence at home. And now we get to play, like, kind of a struggling to have their identity Toronto team. Like, they're gonna give up a lot of possession. They're not gonna know what to do, because now, like, they had nothing, and then because Insigne is like, whatever, reports of him being upset or whatever, I don't know how much I believe that. I mean, I believe a lot of it, but he is still, like, he scored a vintage Insigne goal in this last game, and Bernardeschi is still, like, one of the best players in this league, so they still have the firepower up front, but they're not the revamped powerhouse that they were advertising themselves to be at the beginning of last year. They're just kind of like a bad team with good players on it. And like, that's what we're going to face. And I expect this game will be much more frustrating than the last two games we've watched at home, but that we should expect a level of success. I think a draw minimum is a good expectation to keep the momentum going and to look good going forward. Yeah.
I'll co-sign that. I'll co-sign a draw. I mean, like, I think not only a good expectation, but also, yes, a good goal. No pun intended. This is the kickoff to the road leg, right? We've been we've been holding it down at home, and that's been fun. That's been good. Now we have to show that we are competitive in the larger context of the country. We got to get out there and show these tools don't diminish when we're not using them in our own backyard. And I think the draw is the bare minimum to be able to make that statement.
Who would we play after? Yes, you're right.
All Charlotte.
Charlotte, yeah, away. Who knows how that's going to go. That was wild last time. Didn't we get they got a red card and their fans were booing us and whatever. I don't know. It was like crazy game. I would be nice to have a little revenge for them beating us at home last year.
Yeah, that would be nice. It would be nice to win all these games. Let's just win all of them. Why don't we try that? Trey, where do you tweet at?
Haven't they... excuse me, Nick Cushing, I have a question. Have you tried winning every game? Like, if you just... Have you even thought about that? Like, it seems like a good idea to...
It feels like he has... it seems like he hasn't. This felt like a novelty, this last one. But, you know, hey, I'm not a coach. I don't know. I'm just a guy who thinks we should be winning every game. And that might be a good strategy for the future.
I hope the new U.S. sporting director comes in and talks just like that. It's like, what if you guys, hear me out, what if we won a game?
What if it's like it's sort of a reverse Ted Lasso and he comes in and he's just an unbelievable asshole and no one likes him, you know? And like, and it's all, it sort of teaches you the virtues of being an unlikable piece of shit. And all the sort of life lessons that you can learn from someone who's a total fucking jack-off.
He just, instead of having the believe sign above his office, it just says, it's called football. Idiots.
Trey, where do you tweet at?
Trey Fillmore, what about you?
At Jake Beckhardt, and you can find us both at Blue Balls Blue Pod. Blue Balls Pod,
baby.
In the link on Twitter. You know, it's crashing. Who knows? Are we ever going to pay for Twitter Blue? No, right? We can't possibly.
No.
Okay, so when this hellhole website goes down, our link tree will still be up, and you can go to it to drop a dollar in the tip jar or to buy some of our merch. Hotly featured in more and more households across America. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to us for yet another week, and we will catch you on the other side of Charlotte. Next week's Don't Come Looking. Thanks so much. Bye.
The Cash App, I don't think, is in the link tree. I got to add it back in or something fucked up, because we did get a dono, and we appreciate it. And
We did get a dono. Last minute dono shout out.
And we won't be here next week, but stay tuned, follow us, we'll figure it out. Okay, sorry, stepped on you. Bye.
Donor shout out to Matt T. Thank you for the Jackson, baby. Bye.
Bye.